Hello, and welcome to Living Vertical Radio, where we change the narrative of media by introducing you to creative and innovative individuals that inspire you with their unique stories. Our host is C. Steen Duckworth, and you can call in or Skype into this program by calling 1-646-668-2928 #1. Please make sure your surrounding area is quiet because this is a live program. One Sure Sign Mobile Notary of Frisco, Texas provides professional notary service across the Dallas metro area. Our notary professionals are ready to help you with loan closings, power of attorney, fingerprinting, and other notary services. We meet you at your location of choice, your home, office, hospital, or local coffee shop, convenient to your schedule. Reliable, professional, and affordable. One Sure Sign is happy to support Living Vertical Radio here in Texas. Mention you heard this ad on Living Vertical for $5 off any notary service. Interested in advertising on our podcast with a listening audience of over 800,000? You can do a 15-second business ad, a 30-second radio ad, or a 10-minute interview radio ad. Our prices start out at $50. Contact us at info@verticalmediagroup.com. Our pricing is made to give everyone the ability to advertising no matter the budget. Thank you. And here's your host, C. Steen Duckworth.
And hello, everybody. I hope we're all staying safe and having a great day. Right now, it is 108 degrees in Arizona. We're going through a heat wave, which is every day in Arizona. So welcome to our program today. We have author Scott Brody with us today, and he has written a book called The Org. And I'd like to give you just a little bit of short synopsis that I have here. In the near future, the Echo Party USA is surging as people hear Lee Beloit, whose charismatic and powerful messages turn him for leadership in a fight against climate change. As food shortages are increasing, the weather is deteriorating, and people are starting to panic. So this is just a little short synopsis of The Org by author Scott Brody. Now, Scott has marched in the Vietnam, against the war in Vietnam. He listened to Gene Shepherd on WOR and WBAI until all hours, read Ray Bradbury, which I love, and the Ramparts. And the summer he graduated from high school, he went to Woodstock. So we're excited to have Scott with us today to talk about his book, The Org, and to answer some of the questions that we've put together for him after doing some reading with this book and a little bit of reading about Scott. So I'd like to welcome Scott Brody. Hi, Scott. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. So happy to have you on our show. Thank you for saying yes.
Me too.
And excited about your book, too.
Thank you.
But you spent some, years in a political group similar to what you've written about in The Org. You want to tell me a little bit about that?
When I came out of college, or I guess during my senior year of college, which was a long time ago, I was sort of, attracted to this group, was interested in what they were doing. They were very idealistic, wanted to do a lot of good things. And so I started going to meetings and doing activities and stuff like that. And then after a while, I realized that I was kind of getting pulled into it. And it that's when I understood that really this was, Jordan, the leader, was a very charismatic leader. so I did that for a couple of years, And then at a certain point, I just said, okay, well, this doesn't seem to be working out and I'm not happy doing this anymore. So I left. And that's sort of the end of the story, except that I saw a lot of things there. And I always felt like, boy, you know, that would be a good story to tease out and write into a book. And I kept it in my head for many years. And finally, a couple of years ago, I decided, okay, well, it's kind of now or never. So let's get serious about it. And I took some courses at UCLA at the Writers Extension there, which really helped me a great deal. And did a mentorship with one of the authors and eventually put it together, and here it is.
So how long did it take you to write, even, you know, going through your, you know, school and then finally writing the book? How long did it take you to write this?
I figure about 2 years. I came into it with having already written probably quite a bit. I don't know, 7, 8, 9 chapters, something like that. But in the course of taking the courses and thinking the whole thing through, I rewrote entirely. I rewrote the whole thing really multiple times. So I really wound up not using any of the original stuff, but I did use some of the characters and things like that.
So what probably was your most difficult part of you crafting the story?
Difficult, you know, crafting any story is difficult. And if you're writing a book, I mean, at least for me, I felt like, you know, this really has to be good. It really has to make sense and hang together. It was, a lot of it took place back in the 1970s when I was first around it. And that wasn't really working for me. I couldn't make the connection to, you know, how do I end it? Where does it go? What's the story? And then finally I realized, you know what? This book needs to be placed in the current day, and actually a little bit, as you read, a little bit in the future. Because it makes so much more sense in terms of today's political environment than it did back then. So as soon as I did that, it kind of like, it really came to life all of a sudden. Like, oh, okay, yeah, this really works. And, you know, from there, I just pretty much went through it with, as I say, quite a few large sections, not the whole thing.
So tell me about how you came up with your characters. Are some of them real or are some of them made up?
Most of them are fictional. There are a couple that are sort of inspired by some real life people or real life situations. I started with sort of a foundation of what kind of characters I wanted and what situation I wanted. You know, I opened up, have you actually read the book or any part of it?
I read some parts of the book, yes.
Okay, so, you know, I wanted to see if you're familiar with some of it. So, you know, there's that section in the beginning where the girl gets killed. Well, that was always part of the story. But all of a sudden it was like, wait a minute, what's the right motive for that? I'm not sure that that's really right. I had to redo it and get the right motive and get the right people and get that set up. So there was no incident in my group where someone got killed like that. But some of the other incidents were fairly true, and at least they are modeled after my characters. And then I created a lot of additional characters just to kind of make it realistic, I thought.
Okay. So now, when you create your characters, well, when you create your characters, do you, because I love to ask this of writers, when you create your characters, did you kind of do an outline of each character and, you know, do characteristics and hobbies and all of that? Or did you just kind of let it flow when you wrote?
Yeah, I mostly let it flow. I kept trying to find a system of following characters or outlining the story and stuff like that. And you know what? I never could. Every time I tried, it didn't really work. And I just had to sort of keep the whole thing in my head and make sure it all made sense. So, yeah, that's about it. There were a couple of situations where I found that I wrote, let's say, about 15 pages of a little part of a story for, you know, that fit into the book somewhere.
Right.
And then I decided, you know, it's too much. We don't really need that. So I would use just the beginning and just the end, let's say. I thought that actually worked out really well. There was a lot of stuff in between that I didn't really need. And when I took it out and looked at it that way, it flowed much better, made a lot of sense. But I wouldn't have been able to have done that and know how the characters, you know, spoke and what they did and where they went if I hadn't written the whole thing out. So that's the closest I came to having a system like you're talking about. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. So, you know, you have a lot of things going on in here, but also, you know, I kind of read activism in here. You have some things about climate change, and I wanted to ask you, you know, is fiction, is this book, is any of your writing a kind of a platform for you to talk about climate change? And how important is climate change to you?
Yeah, it is somewhat. And, you know, I was looking at your website earlier this afternoon, and I was interested to see that, you know, you have some articles talking about looking at art in terms of activism. And,
yes,
you know, I like that. I thought that was interesting because that's a little bit of where I went with the book, too. Yeah, the backdrop to it is climate change is further advanced than it is now. Said it 5 years, 10 years down the road. I wasn't really specific about where in the future. Part of what I'm saying is, you know, the Lee Beloit character is a little bit of a love him or hate him kind of character. And that's fine. I wanted to have him be complex like that. And you know, practical politician. So part of my message is, you know, that's what we're going to get if we don't get active sooner and make something change quicker. And at other points in the book, there's depiction of really street fighting between, you know, Republicans and Democrats, or however you want to, members of the eco party, certainly Lee's group, and, you know, them being attacked by the right wingers. And that's part of what I'm saying, too, is, you know, we have to realize that climate change is going to be a fight, a real fight. And I'm not sure people are taking that seriously. So, you know, I'm trying to make people look a little down the road and say, this is kind of the crystal ball unless we do something sooner. Like, climate change doesn't work until the whole world, all the countries of the world, figure out a way to work together. And so far, they can never do that. That's like, seems to be impossible. But they're going to have to find a way. And in a way, the COVID-19 virus experience, you know, it's kind of a precursor to all of that, in my mind. Right?
Yeah,
because we have to work together. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say that. It was kind of like the COVID-19 was just a real, thinking like you and thinking about the future, there were some elements in that really, you know, put us in a situation that if this happens, it's exactly what you're talking about. I don't think people can make the connection. A lot of people can't make that connection. But there was just a few things and stuff, and there's things happening now, even now. You know, we're talking about your book, and I'm like, there's still some things that are so eerily so close to what we're seeing
right
now.
I talked about, you know, food panic buying and you know, prices spiking and supply going down and things like that. And that was, you know, obviously I wrote that long before, you know, this whole episode we're going through now.
So you went to Woodstock when you graduated. So yeah. Growing up in the 60s compared to, how do you feel about growing up in the 60s and comparing that activism to today's activism in politics? Do you think that if there's any elements of, what can I say? Because I certainly think that we had more bravery, or we weren't too, you know, we were more likely to really get out in the streets then than we are now. I sometimes feel that people are just a little bit more complacent now.
Right. I think that's true. You don't see that kind of demonstration or activism or things like that, which is too bad. I mean, it could happen. It could certainly happen because, you know, in those days, it was largely about the war in Vietnam, and it was such a clear and present danger, and it was people were getting drafted. So it was very personal. People were fighting over. So it's hard to, you know, climate change is such a sort of slow-moving disaster that I think it's hard for people to get a handle on it. But, you know, I'm optimistic. I think people have their heads in the right place. I think the younger generation is smart and focused and can do a lot and are realizing that they're going to have to do a lot. So,
that's,
you know, I hope so. I figure that's, yeah, I feel like that's a legacy that our generation left with our kids. And, you know, that was that's valuable. You know, it's something real. I mean, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I watched the 2020 graduation that was kind of what they put on with the different schools in Obama. And I was really impressed at the students for the work they did, and to hear the conversations and the music and what they were thinking. And it really encouraged me looking at these kids graduating in 2020. They were, you know, these are kids with their own minds, their own thoughts, their own beliefs, but at the same time, you know, they've taken a lot of the great, I think, values from their parents. And that was great to see. That was encouraging to see.
And yes, I agree, and I'm glad to hear you say that. But also, I mean, those kids, what a time to be graduating high school. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God, yeah. Wow.
I feel so bad for them. Good Lord, what are they walking out into?
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, sometimes that's okay.
Yeah, it is.
You know,
it is okay.
Learn.
I mean, I think, you know, when I graduated from school, I was such a militant at the time. I was angry at everything. But, you know, it was like, you know, it was a time that, you know, we had to get, I mean, I learned a lot. I learned a lot from some great people. But, you know, it was, you know, we were fighting at that time to just be, you know, treat it fairly. And so I think sometimes I watched what my mother went through. Everybody in my family is an activist. So coming to this time now, for a moment, I was like, okay, let's hope this next generation coming out is not one that will stand on people's shoulders, but that it'll be one that will go forward and not wait for anyone to, you know, say this has to be changed. They'll see that, and they'll work toward that change. So I'm very happy about that. Now, your book, how is it similar to other genres? Now, I don't know. I consider, to me, your book is like speculative fiction. What do you say it is?
It's just generally characterized, like on Amazon, it's characterized as a political thriller, something like that.
Okay.
It's not too futuristic. It's not. I really tried hard not to be dystopian, because, you know, I'd rather be more optimistic about that. But it's hard to define. To me, I don't know. I think that's one of the issues I'm having with getting it published and distributed, and sold and all that is it's not a clear genre. Can't say
okay.
It's a detective. It's a mystery. You know, everybody
mm-hmm.
knows what those
yeah.
are.
Yeah. Right.
A little different. Which maybe
yeah, it is different, yeah.
Maybe people don't do that. But that's kind of what I would call it. Speculative, is that what you said?
Speculative fiction. So it's designed, it's written to make you think.
Well, that is true. I mean, it's sort of.
Right.
I feel like it's a little
yeah,
it's a little pretentious on my part to say that, but I would hope so.
Well, it's interesting that there's so many. I work with a few writers, and it's interesting that there are so many new different genres that they talk about. But then when you're looking at like Amazon or some of the bookstores. You still see kind of the same type of genres. They really haven't changed it much. It's very few. When I heard the term speculative fiction, for me it was like, oh, I definitely know what fits into that. You know, so I said I kind of like that. You know, I like that name. Because I love reading books that do make you think about what's going on. It's a story, it's done creatively, and it makes you think about what's going on, not only in the book to kind of give you, some ideas, but it also like, oh my God, that really could happen, you know? That's just me and my little conspiracy stuff that I do every once in a while. That's it. My creative mind when it goes crazy.
That's okay.
So, right. Yeah. So, who is your favorite author and why?
Wow.
Right.
I can't imagine having one person that I would say is my favorite author. There's so many great authors
uh-huh.
out there. I mean, you
there
know, I
is.
Mentioned Ray Bradbury in that cover because
uh-huh.
it had a big effect on me. I mean, Ray Bradbury is one of those rites of passage, you know, that you read when you're
yeah.
13 or something and
mm-hmm.
makes a big impression. And you know, he was brilliant in those years and it was
mm-hmm.
great. So, I don't know. I'm saying that because, you know, you said it. But beyond that, I don't know. I mean, I have read, believe it or not, I mean, I read a fair amount of Stephen King. I also read a lot
okay.
of nonfiction. I'm interested in history, so I read a lot of nonfiction.
Okay, good.
And then I just read, I try to read current books just to sort of stay on top of the styles and the way
okay.
people are writing and what
mm-hmm.
kind of things people are reading. So
that's
right. always really interesting.
As a writer, do you think it's better to write what you love and what you're interested in? Or do you think some writers can step totally out of what they're comfortable with and write?
Well, I can't imagine writing something that you're totally, you know, not comfortable with and don't feel like it's an intriguing story. But there's certainly
mm-hmm.
plenty of writers that write things that aren't close to them. I just finished a book a month or so ago by a German author who is writing about some people in around the end of the War of the Roses, which I think was around, like, I don't know, 1630 or something like that in
right.
Germany.
Uh-huh.
So,
right.
you know, how can anybody really relate to that? But
right.
good book. I mean, good character. It's a fascinating story. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's hard to say. But I think you have to be, I mean, I'm new to all this. So you should probably not really even listen to what I'm saying about it because I'm still learning all the time.
It's always, you know what, it's even better to talk to someone who's just new to it because it's always good to, a lot of
A lot of our listeners are new writers. A lot of our listeners, want to write. And it's always good because I think I can't tell you how many writers I've interviewed, and I don't think that I've gotten the same answer from any writer, which is, I think that's really good because it also tells people that there's no one way to write a book. Okay. Everyone has done it a different way. And so, because one of my questions to you is how do we share this with an up and coming author? What would you share with them? And there's always a lesson in that question of what would you share with an up and coming writer from your own experience?
What would I share? I'd tell them it takes a lot of work and a long time, and it's got to be a really good story. I mean, that was really, at the end of the day, that was what I set out to do, was to write a great story that kept people interested and involved, had some interesting characters. I find that there's a certain point when I'm writing, if I'm sort of in the groove and writing, I'm happy with what I'm writing and I'm into it, that the characters just sort of have a life of their own. There's lots of times when I'm writing something and I think it's going to end one way. And then as I'm writing it, I'm realizing that, no, some of the characters are pushing it a different way. So just go with that. And, to me, that's kind of when you can make that happen. That to me was the best way to do it. You have to have a certain structure and a certain general direction, but if you're locked into it, it's not going to have the same kind of spontaneity and interest and kind of magic on the part of the characters.
Right. Okay.
So
what are you working on now? What are you working on now? Are you working on any sequel to The Org, or are you working on something different?
I am working on a sequel. I'm working on a couple of things right now. The sequel, it's actually, I'm having a bit of a hard time because, as I said, it takes place about 5 to 10 years in the future. Well, that was before COVID. And, we still don't know how that's really going to play out. And it's difficult for me to write something after this because we don't know what's going to happen between now and then. Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying?
That makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense.
Okay, right. Good. So I'm writing it, but I'm still trying to keep it open because I'm trying to imagine, the different directions that all this could take and how I want to try to incorporate it. It should be part of it. It makes good sense. As we talked about before, there's a definite connection there. But at the same time, I can't tell what's going to happen. So it makes it difficult. There's another couple of things, or primarily one thing that I've been working on for a couple of years as well, which is totally different, not particularly political, just different characters, different story, which I like. But I'm also sort of figuring out what's the best way to, because there's some things that I don't like about it that I need to redo in some of the main characters, some of the characteristics and issues they're dealing with. I decided, that's not what I want to do. So I have to do some rewriting there. So that's what I do. I still work. I haven't given up my day job. So
right.
I do my writing at night.
When do you do your writing? After work?
I do it at after work. Right.
Okay. So what do you do? Well, what do you do when you're not writing? I mean, what is the thing that just energizes you and relaxes you and gives you time away from writing?
It's so hard now because, you know, we can't leave the house more or less.
Right.
And it's been going on for a while.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not writing and it's just a regular day, I'm just relaxing. I'm with my wife or my kids or my dog or something like that. Nothing. There's nothing really special. This is the main thing that really does energize me. And once
right.
I get going, it's involving kind of thing. You're totally into it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's fun. It's hard. It's really hard, but it's fun. Are you
a
writer?
It is fun. Say it again.
Are you a writer?
Yes, I'm a writer. So I totally can relate. Although, and I do write in science fiction, a little bit of speculative fiction. So yeah,
uh-huh.
So I can relate in some ways. Although I'm not a writer that really does a lot of outlining. I'm probably do a little bit more like you. I kind of, you know, have I do know what my, you know, my beginning, my ending, and my middle is going to be. And kind of sometimes I do love the book to take over. But I have done that rewrite like you have too. I've done that rewrite. And then I do a rewrite because I feel that certain things are in the wrong place. After I read
right.
that first,
right.
you know, manuscript. Right, right. So then I'll do a rewrite. So, but I mean, I love it. I'm passionate about it. I love it. I wish I could have a little bit more time to, you know, to write than I have with my business. But it's my future goal is to have more time to write. And then we'll see. So I managed to get a few things close and in editing, you know. But then again, too, I love to read. And like you, I love history as well. And I love seeing how
right.
history can repeat itself. That's something I really do love. So, you know, so we'll wait and see.
Right.
But right now,
exactly.
You know, I started here, and I just love talking to other authors, and we wanted to give authors a voice, more of a voice than we had seen on other radios. I have some favorite radio stations, but my thing was to really share with my community the books that were out there. Books that were enjoyable, books that make you think. And so, you know, this is another one of my passions with my writing is to, talk to different writers and see what their experience is and the new writers as well as writers that have been writing for a long time, most definitely.
That's great. That's fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's like a perfect way to have a job is you have to read.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, so, and I share the books that when I interview authors, I share the books with my community. So I have this really cool app. It's called Nextdoor. And actually it connects me with the 25 neighborhoods in my community. So what's been fun since we're all in quarantine is that how do we get stuff to each other? So it's been really kind of hilarious because I'll say, hey, I interviewed so-and-so. You can hear the interview here. And, you know, I got a couple of books and I want to share. And they'll say, okay, drop it off. You know, so I'll drop it off like at somebody's house and drop the book off. And then two of our neighbors have created little outdoor libraries, you know, that they've built out in front of on the sidewalk near their houses. So we've been switching books in there. And so, you know, we're managing to do this through our quarantine. So it's been a lot of fun. And I've had a lot of fun sharing the authors with my community as well. So it's been really fun.
Yeah, that's great. That's very creative.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Your own little lending library.
Yes, and you know what? They're really, really, really cute, and it's really interesting I think what's been really interesting is to realize that this community is just a small part of my world. And it's been interesting to see what people like to read. It's been interesting introducing them to new authors and, you know, and getting their thoughts on the book. So that's been great.
Yeah. Well, that's a great way to get, you know, good recommendations and stuff, too.
Oh, yeah. So
it's always hard to know what to read.
Well, you know, it's it really is. You know, it's been kind of funny. It's been really good to connect with the neighborhood in that way, to have this app. And so it's really been good because I think also we've been able to help each other out without having to, you know, worry about the social distancing and, you know, and all that. I mean, I've seen some very creative things that neighbors have done to check on other neighbors and just to make sure that, you know, if there's anyone in our community that needs anything, that, you know, someone will, you know, go get it. So, you know, so it's really awesome. You know, I'm going to have to write a book about that. So, you know, how people come together in situations like this. So, so Scott, what do you want people to get from reading your book?
Well, number one, I want them to be entertained. I just want them to enjoy reading it and remember it, you know, recommend it to a friend and all that sort of thing. I also would like them to be more aware and think about the issues of climate change. Think about what could happen, what its day-to-day life is going to be like if we don't do something sooner about it. I mean, it's very obvious that we're not taking it seriously enough. I mean, I think that's clear enough. How to do it? It's a struggle, definitely. I mean, look at how much we're struggling with the economy now with a 2-month shutdown from the COVID thing, and it's terrible. But climate change is going to be much more expensive. It's a much bigger project. But we have a lot more at stake, obviously. It's all of us, all of our generations to follow. So
that's
very
really
true. About that. Yeah.
Okay.
You know,
if I could make
a little bit of a dent that way, that would be awesome.
You know, it's interesting because when I was reading your book, and I also went and read some other websites, and, you know, so like here in Arizona, which has been interesting to kind of watch just this climate change in this area. Our so-called winters are getting shorter and shorter, and our summers are getting longer and longer. And it's really interesting because now it's like, when I was a kid, it was never as hot as it is now. And so I'm always, you know, the city's always putting out different things of how we're going to combat this heat for individuals here. How are we going to combat the heat for our people? And I'm always like, you know, you got to do something because I don't think we can live when it's 125 or 130 degrees. So I don't know. We've had summers where we've been up to 122, and we had one summer that's particularly that was never did go below 112.
Good Lord.
For one summer.
Yeah.
And
it was
interesting. Oh, yeah, it's interesting because I tell individuals, they'll say, oh, I want to come to Arizona. I'm like, not in the summertime. I said, it's a different, it's like being in a bowl because you have the heat that comes from the ground and the heat that comes from the air. So we almost sometimes don't cool down to about 1 o'clock at night.
Right. I know it stays very warm at night. My son went to ASU. So, you know, he was in Tempe, you know, for 4 years.
Yes.
But he never stayed for the summer. You know, he got out of there.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, my God, it's too hot.
Yeah. I'm always looking for places to stay for the summer. I stayed in Georgia for a month. Yeah, for one summer, and it was actually really very, very nice. But yeah, I think of climate change. I think in other ways too, because looking at when we went through COVID, it was really interesting going through COVID because the times that we really they just now opened up Arizona. The times that we were in, we saw just differences in the wildlife that live around here. It was something to see. And I mean, first time we had clean, our air was pretty clear. So I always say you had a glimpse of what could happen if we all just, kind of do the things that we talk about doing to clean up our climate and our air and whatnot. So it's like, are we going to continue on or what? So definitely.
Well, that's, part of the argument. Yeah. In the book where, Lee Beloit, he's talking about it and he's on MSNBC doing interviews and, his point basically is we know what to do. So we need to just do it. Stop messing around. Otherwise, or else forget it. And as far as like the automobile goes, he says, well, let's just take over all the factories and, the Defense Production Act that they keep talking about that, Trump's not doing for the vaccine and stuff. So let's just retool, make all electric cars. Let's stop making internal combustion engines completely. And, we can find a way to get people into the cars. We can afford that and get all the gas guzzling things off the street, period, and stop using them. And, in a couple of years, we're going to padlock the gas station, and that's going to be that. So, like, why aren't we doing this now? We know we have to do it, so why don't we just do
it?
What's the problem?
What is the problem? You're right about that. What is the problem?
Right. Like, another one of his things is he says, Brazil – with that crazy man Bolsonaro, and they're endlessly destroying the Amazon rainforest. Well,
right.
We need that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We all need it. So why don't we send some troops there? Let's send the army down there and take it over and stop the destruction.
Mm-hmm.
We could do that.
Right.
That's not difficult.
Mm-hmm.
We can do all of these things. We just don't have the will to do it. And you've got the right wing and the Republicans and all that who are dead set against it, who are going to fight against it. They're going to fight tooth and nail until it's fighting in the street. And you don't think that's going to happen, but it could happen because we're talking about a lot of money, a lot of power, a lot of control, and they're not going to give it up easily. So, we know what we have to do. It's not that difficult. But we're not doing it. That's the problem.
Right.
And, you mentioned that, these moments of, hey, the air is clear. Gee, this looks so nice. Well, guess what? We can have that every day.
Absolutely.
Right? We're just not doing it.
Well, Scott, I appreciate the time that you spent with us, and I sure would love to, read that sequel when you have it done and have you come back and talk to us. And then definitely come back and talk to us. Okay. But definitely for our listeners, if you'd like to get a copy of Scott's book, Scott Brody's book, The Org, you can contact me at info@verticallifemagazine.com. And that's vertical with a K. And I will be glad to send you out my copies so you can enjoy this book. And if you, and if you get a book from me and you read the book, do me a favor and put a nice review on Amazon for the book. I would really appreciate that. And
yeah, so would I. That would be great.
That would be great.
Yep.
Definitely, that would be great. Scott, I've enjoyed our conversation and definitely would love to have you back with us again. So
thank
good
you.
Luck
I'd,
on
I'd,
writing
I'd
your
like
sequel.
To.
Okay, for sure. Well, we'll have you
in
there. We'll be watching to see what you're doing. And how can people contact you if they wanna contact you, Scott?
Social media. I'm on Facebook, of course, and Twitter. So you can just find me there. Scott Brody, B-R-O-D-Y.
All right. We are following you on Twitter. I love keeping up with the author, so I did hit the follow button today. So we can kind of keep up with what
there
you're doing. Yeah, for sure. So thank you again, and I wish you all the best in writing your sequel.
Thank you.
And yeah, all the best in going through COVID, and you keep your family safe. And
same
we just appreciate having you on here. Yes. And
you,
for
you,
everyone
you and all your
that's been with. Yeah, thank you so much. And thank you for, thank you for going to our site. It's a work in progress. But we definitely, it's a work in progress along with everything else. This summer we're trying to start something with our teens, our 12-year-olds and our school systems around here that want to be writers and write poetry. And so thank you for going to the site, because we're really trying to push some social enterprise programs through that have to do with creativity and arts and culture.
Sure. Yes, very good.
Thank you.
Well,
thank you. Well, we have had Scott Brody on our program today. He is the author of The Org. We appreciate him on there. And, hey, you know what? Give me a shout-out if you enjoyed this program, and please share it. We'll be sharing the recorded version on our social media and on our magazine as well. Also, if you like to find out any events that are going on, please keep in touch with us on our radio page, Vertical Live Radio on Facebook. And thank you, everybody. And this has been Living Vertical Radio with author Scott Brody. I'm your host, Celeste Duckworth, and I look forward to seeing you next Wednesday. Thank you, Scott, and have a wonderful day. Yes. Take care.
No, I enjoyed that. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.